Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 324. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
And I'm chilling in the bar down in Tatooine.
Graham Thickens.
I am so happy this morning now that I've heard that music.
And Dward Farquhar. I mean, Phil Wilson.
Chilling in the canteen, in the bar down at Tatooine. Yeah, baby.
That's right. It sounds like it could be.
Would you be a bigger geek? I mean, really.
Alternative soundtrack to that cantina scene.
You know, it kind of could be, yeah. Yeah. No, there's a guy on SoundCloud, and I'll put the stuff in the show notes. DJ Eclectic Mick is his name. And the guy does all of these mashups like this. And I got to tell you, some of them are absolutely phenomenal. Like this one's really great. You got to listen to the whole thing. But Creative Commons license, and we're good to go. So
nice.
Say, hey, I really wanted to take my son, Phil, to this glitch event that you went to because, you know, he's going to be getting into video game production. And how was it?
It was all right. I mean, it was crowded. It was a little bit warm. The offices of Glitch are just, I think, opening. I think they open on Monday. So this was sort of a pre-opening sort of thing.
And I don't
think
the air conditioning
wasn't quite working. No, they're in. They're right across from the Carlson School.
Okay.
I don't know. That's not considered Northeast, is it?
No.
Okay.
No. What is that? Cedar Riverside?
Yeah, Cedar Riverside. That's it. But nice little space, and had a great showing of game developers and game enthusiasts and some folks doing it. Chip Peterson was there from Concrete, and then Martin Greider was there. Martin is a good friend, and Abstract Puzzles is his game, but they all kind of talked a little bit about what's going on in the gaming world and how people can get involved and, you know, what needs to be done to make this the hub of game development and get more people hired and that sort of a thing. So it was a good event. And it was nice to see so many people gathered for it. I don't know. Is it a game changer? I don't know, but it's another part of the tech world that's growing and seems to be growing here in Minnesota. So.
Nice.
Was anyone wearing a virtual reality headset?
Nobody that I saw. No.
Just wondering.
No, it was great. But the folks at Pollen put that together, which was it's part of their Rally Cry series. Great.
So yeah, I didn't even know they were doing that space down there.
Yeah, it's a very nice space. It's right above a rather trashy looking bar restaurant, but then again, everything is. So.
Yeah. Well, hey, you went to the Coco Northeast, the opening, right?
That was actually on the same night, and it was kind of nice to see everybody there. That's a great space. I don't know, Graham, have you been able to check that out yet?
Well, I was there several times for sport when it was Sport Engine.
When it was Sport Engine,
I know the space, but I did not make it to the event.
Yeah, it was great.
But it was well attended, I assume.
Yes, it was very well attended, and it was nice to see everybody. We're just up the street from them, so it was good to pop by and see our neighbors. But also talked a lot with Kyle Kulbroth about the upcoming Coco Camp that they're doing, or Camp Coco is what they're calling it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
If you're a Coco member, you can check that out. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But that looks like it's going to be a fun event.
Well, yeah, and I understand all you have to do is just bring your own marshmallows.
So. That's right. All your s'mores makings.
Yeah.
Bring
they
your
got
s'mores.
Everything else. Vaya, baby.
Speaking of marshmallows, Vaya. Minnesota and Cubs high tech finalists have been in. No, that was a bad segue.
Speaking of marshmallows,
they're going to have marshmallows at the Minnesota Cup reception?
No. They announced their three finalists for the high tech division of the entrepreneurial competition.
The AstroPad guys were at Midwest Mobile Summit up in Fargo. So I've seen them. The question that always jumps into my mind, being a former marketing guy or at least marketing minded, is AstroPad's got this logo that it looks like Astro the dog it's really sort of a takeoff of Astro the dog from the Jetsons. So I always kind of wonder if Hanna-Barbera was aware of their logo.
Oh,
look out. Yeah.
Well,
that could.
Yeah.
It could
be.
Is there app, interesting?
It is interesting. It's sort of this, you know, this sketch pad for your iPad turns it into a drawing system. So,
well, yeah. what it is, it's a virtual Wacom tablet, or Wacom slate. Cause you know, those Wacom slates are those things alone are like, to get a decent one is probably $400 or $500.
I mean, yeah, I guess I've never heard the Wacom slate. So that's kind of cool.
They've been around.
It's Wacom. It's Wacom to me, but what do I know?
They call it, they say it Wacom.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. As a whack-a-mole.
W-A-C-O-M. Well, but they've been around for a long time, and they started off with these really enormous graphics tablets that were like, you know, $2,000 a piece. And then they, over time, slowly but surely, made them smaller and smaller and smaller. Well, now this AstroPad's kind of cool. Because you don't need.
Aren't there a lot of these apps, though, Steve? I mean, what will set this one apart, I wonder?
Well, this one is using the iPad as a drawing surface, and and it shows up on your Mac, so that's really the difference.
Okay.
And so then you can you can do things in there. Yeah, exactly. It pairs, and so that's really cool. But you know, at some point, we all know that iOS and OS 10 are going to come together, and the app will be just sitting on the Mac itself. You know, so you'll draw right on that surface. At least that's my assumption. That's my prediction.
That's your prediction?
Yeah. Well, the other two that are at the Minnesota Cup, Kipsu, we know, but I don't know Prevent Biometrics, a company with products such as a mouth guard that can detect concussion and alert medical staff, things like that. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one for high school and college sports, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And there is a local mouth guard company, but I don't know that it has anything to do with that company. I've heard something about it. I think, do I vaguely recall it was started by students? I don't know. I don't have a link to their site right now, but yeah. So three finalists is all
right
in that category. I guess that's the way they always do it. Yeah, three. And have they narrowed down on the other categories yet, or
they haven't announced anything yet. No, they haven't announced anything.
Okay.
So, but then our pals at Sport Engine, this company is just, I mean, especially you, Phil, you've used the app extensively, right?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Or their web app for building sports sites and so forth.
Sports sites, yeah.
Have you kept abreast of the things that they're doing beyond just working just with sports teams?
No, I have not, as a matter of fact. I mean, that's strictly my experience with them. I really haven't spent much time with what they're doing beyond that myself. So have you?
Well, I have not, but I remember when I interviewed Justin Coffenberg.
Justin?
A long time ago. And I mean, he was on they gave me a demo of Engine. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at that, I thought, and I said it out loud as well, this thing could be morphed into multiple areas. I mean, it just doesn't have to be a focus on sports. Well, you know, it's the old adage, Geoffrey Moore's Crossing the Chasm and books like that. You focus and you dominate a space, and then you go out into other markets. You don't try to do everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, but when I saw Engine as a platform, is I immediately saw the opportunity to take that platform into a lot of different markets.
So, yeah, well, that's interesting. Did you get a rise out of Justin at all on that? Because I've heard no hint of that, but.
No, I mean, they were very clear that they were focusing on sports, period.
Yeah.
That's it.
And, yeah, it's like, unless they're going to change their name to like Everything Engine or something.
Yeah.
But, they do a lot beyond just amateurs. Well, maybe not a lot, but they do have things beyond amateur sports teams. I mean, they're working with some pro and semi-pro teams, and they've done custom development of websites for some pretty big time sports leagues, you know, the rugby league, and didn't they do the local lacrosse teams site and things like that? But these are custom one-off kinds of things, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But they have a whole department of designers that that customize and do that some of that special project work.
Well, and if you go to their site, you know, their big focus is the ultimate in team management. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just a matter of, hey, we can do a website. We can build a website.
Right.
This is really a platform for team management. And the one thing that I haven't seen them get into is when you think about all of the sports films that are being done, there isn't part of this that is video centric, other than, you know, embedding and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm going to actually.
Yeah, they have a lot of data and a lot of archives of sports images and videos.
Right.
And I know when they did their first acquisition, because I helped them announce it back in 2011, they acquired the Wisconsin Sports Network. Part of what they wanted was a huge 10-year archive of image assets and probably video and film too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you would think they could be doing more in that space. But Brian Bell, the announcement of him joining as chief revenue officer was interesting. It's kind of startup musical chairs going on here.
Well, it is, but
he went from Compellent to Code 42, and now, you know, he exited there. A few months later, bam, here he is again, which is great. He's a great guy, super sales experienced guy, heading worldwide sales for Compellent.
Well, and then heading up market development is Angie Franks, who I think I mentioned on another podcast I worked with at Lawson Software. She's the head of market development. And so, in fact, we're going to grab coffee this week. I just couldn't do it. So we're going to try to get together here in the next couple of weeks. But point is that I'm going to pick her brain in terms of where they're headed with the platform. And
You should.
If she can disclose anything.
Are you coming to their open house in a couple of weeks?
I'm sure going to try. Yeah. Sure going to try.
Yeah, me too. I'll be there. Yep. Week after next, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Code 42, they're going to stop selling SharePlan.
I think it
not
makes
a
sense.
Big surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's too much competition there.
That didn't go as well as they'd hoped, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, when you're taking on Dropbox and Google Drive and OneDrive, I mean, entrenched, you know, very big competitors, I think it's, you know, it's a shrewd move to, like, pull out of there.
Well, it's a race to the bottom.
It's very much a reflection of, you know, the strengths of the CEO as well. I mean, he's a more of a security guy than a, you know, a sharing guy. So I think that you'll see a lot more.
Well, and also when you're
security tools,
when you're the new CEO, one of the first things you do, of course, is you come in and you just do an assessment of where the resources are being spent and where's the upside and what's the addressable market and all of that. And I'm sure he just looked at this right away and went, no, we're not putting any more nickels in that basket. Mm-hmm. Let's be done with that. So
do you think he said it just that way too?
I would say probably not. But he probably used quarters as a metaphor.
Yeah, because he does make a lot of money. So.
Yeah. Well, Well, Tim, retail boy. This was
retail boy.
This was a big one. That's
it was.
Tell us about this Target adventure, putting beacon technology in 50 test stores.
Yeah, they're finally rolling this out. This was the big story in the retail press this week that they're rolling out beacons for iOS devices in 50 stores across the country, really. But if you look at where they're doing it here, and then they're doing it in larger markets like New York and Chicago, but also in tech markets like Seattle and San Francisco and Portland, too. So they're looking at ways to integrate beacons to push messages to at least iOS customers while they're in the store.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has been something that's been on the top of the technology list for the last couple of years in retail, and no one's really done much with it. And this is the first major foray into it by any retailer. I mean, there's been people...
Except Apple. Because apparently they have beacons everywhere, but I've had no experience when I've walked into an Apple store where I've had a beacon-centric experience where I've been pinged by something.
Well, there have been other retailers that have dabbled in it. Macy's and Lord & Taylor have done trials, but no one's really rolled it out aggressively. And this, I mean, 50 stores is not super aggressive when you've got thousands. But yeah, it's good to see that they're trying this, and we'll see how it works.
Yeah.
It's sure been talked about a lot for a long time, and it's, you know, there just hasn't been that much, as you alluded to, that, you know, that we've heard about, that anybody doing much with it.
Well, when did Apple roll out LE in their handsets? Was it the iPhone 5 or was it the 5S?
5S.
Okay.
I know
so
for sure.
If you look at it, I mean, they didn't really have a critical mass of devices in the marketplace that had the capability until probably recently. So as the 5S sort of gets down at the bottom of the market, and you've got the 6 and 6S, I guess, or 7, whatever comes out this fall, then you've got more saturation. So it's kind of smart that these guys have held back until there's been a lot more customers walking in with devices that will work with this technology.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I just, you know, it's the old intrusion thing. You know, do you necessarily want to be pinged every time? Hey, go around this corner. There's clearance items on the back. It's like, oh, please.
Right. Yeah. Well, it remains
that, though.
True.
It remains to be seen how consumers are going to like it.
Correct.
Well, correct. I like the, what is it? Whatever. The cartwheel. I keep forgetting the name.
Their app. Target's
when
app.
When you're in the store and you just open the Cartwheel app up, you can scan any product and it will tell you if it has a Cartwheel deal. You don't have to like hunt and peck through their deals. So you just go in there and you scan everything in, and 9 times out of 10, you get a 5% or 10% discount on something.
Yeah, yeah.
So what they're doing right now is very interesting, and hopefully this will just bring this to the next level for those that have iOS devices anyway.
Right.
So.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I just don't go into Target stores that much. It's so quiet in there. It drives me crazy. It's like there's no music. It's like, whoa. Really?
So you hang out at Michael's?
This is weird in here, man.
You hang out at Michael's and buy your crafts stuff there?
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we everyone wants to see some photos of the dogs playing cards in Las Vegas that you've been making. Graham.
What?
Dogs Graham? Playing cards.
Yeah. Oh, hello.
Yeah. Sorry.
Wow, that was kind of out of left field.
That was funny in my head.
Funny
by the
in
time
your head
it got out.
Hilarious your head. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't thought about Las Vegas since January when I had to go there against my own
will. I'm trying to connect in my own weird way how Steve made that leap. I'm sorry.
Well, because of crafts.
Could you talk us through that?
Because Graham
quick?
Is making crafts and he goes to Michael's stores.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. Oh. So then he was making.
Oh, brother.
I know.
That was.
All right. Let's get back on track.
Did you have a dream about that at some point in your life in the last week that says a lot about you, Steve, and I'm a little concerned.
Hey, look, I have ADD. That's how I make connections.
The thing I always forget. You're right. Connections
have bizarre connecting points, but
connect the dots on this smart thing Zigbee alliance.
Well, look, just for everyone who's listening, Smart Things, who's now part of Samsung and was co-founded by Ben Edwards and is here, joined the Zigbee alliance as a board member. And I thought this was really interesting because there's been this big debate among technologists and engineers about Z-Wave versus Zigbee. And everybody's talked about Z-Wave being the better protocol because of distance and the way that it handshakes and yada, yada, yada. But turns out that Zigbee has lower power requirements. And so it makes more sense when you're in a small space like a home. Or a hospital room. So, for healthcare, for home automation, stuff like that, or equipment monitoring, et cetera. Zigbee is actually a really inexpensive and easy to implement protocol with very low power requirements. I mean, similar to Bluetooth LE. And so that made perfect sense for smart things in terms of moving in that direction. So this is kind of an interesting move on their part.
Yeah, but how about the researchers finding a major security flaw with Zigbee just reported 21 hours ago?
Yeah, I know, but you know what? Seriously, I mean, WordPress, for example, I was going to have something in there. They just released 4.2.4, fixing critical security holes. Well, they just had a release like days earlier, which also fixed some critical security holes. I mean, this is, you know, the amount of hacking. Ongoing. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's going crazy.
So, Steve, does HomeKit, does that support Zigbee too? Or do you know, or has it been announced? What's Apple going to do? And I guess is the question in this space.
That is a very good question. And here we go. HomeKit speaks HomeKit accessory protocol app, which runs on top of a BLE, Bluetooth smart, or an HTTP TCP/IP stack. So it appears that Apple once again has done their own thing.
Screw the standards. They've got to have something to knit in with all the devices. So I can't imagine that they're going to say, hey, do it the Apple way. Screw you, Zigbee and Z-Wave and whatever is in the marketplace.
I would sure think, yeah.
But they could. So. I mean, they've done it in the past, but yeah. I don't know.
Well, I'll do some research on this. We can talk about it next week. How's that sound?
Okay. Good.
Because I am curious about it now. So...
But we'll have to have Steve's IoT tip of the week.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this was absolutely huge. Now, I don't know how many people have heard about the IBM Mac embrace that's been going on. So originally, during this IBM Apple alliance that they forged some time ago, that there was discussions of they could buy up to 50,000 Macs. Now that number has changed to 200,000. And I just saw an article yesterday that said it's possible that all 356,000 employees could potentially get Macs. Well, we'll see if that happens.
Wow. But yeah, that would be over time.
Yeah, but then IBM came out and they announced something called, you know, like the IBM management, Mac management stack or whatever. And I thought, oh, great. They created their own thing to go compete with Jamf software here in Minneapolis. Well, it turns out they actually inked a deal with Jamf, and I think this is huge.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually makes a lot of sense now that they brought in Dean Hager as CEO, because Dean was an IBMer for many, many years. He was also the principal guy at Lawson when he was an executive vice president there, who drove the deal with IBM to... rewrite a lot of Lawson so that it would run on the IBM stack. So this makes perfect sense that they brought Dean Hager in to run this thing. Because this is going to be huge for Jamf. Oh my God.
Yep.
This is, pretty exciting.
Did you hear there's already 100 IBM employees at Cupertino, at Apple headquarters?
Yeah. I saw
so
some.
That's
how
many?
How many?
Thing is getting 100.
Wow.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. So it's getting to be a very serious partnership, obviously.
No kidding.
So good for Jamf, though. That's they're just going to continue growing like mad, I think.
Well, I'll tell you what, their software is so elegant and works so well. And these guys are so smart with respect to what they come out with that there's nobody that does it better than them. I got to believe they're going to get acquired.
Yeah, you wonder, don't you? I mean,
well, because,
who and how, you know?
Well, why not IBM? IBM can take it global almost overnight.
There you go, yeah.
So, well, hey.
It could happen.
Tim Boy.
Yep.
So what's, I think, well, who was it? Was it you or was it Phil
What?
That first brought Bring Me the News to our attention.
I think it was Tim. But keep in mind, at that time, it was not Bring Me the News. It was Rick Cupcella's Bring Me the News.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, right.
Well, that added to the journalistic integrity of the site.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, no, he had
sure,
a name,
and
he
it sure good. Made it sure made Rick very happy.
But he was when he was a reporter here, he was really pretty good. He was one of the better ones, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I think that brought some gravity to it, but. I have to say that
Carl Pulpad's Bring Me the News.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's kind of an interesting, interesting deal here. I'm not sure. I threw this MinnPost piece in because it says that what they're doing with it. And after reading it, I still don't know what the Pulpads are doing with it. Looks like they're adding some more staff to their news organization.
I think Hubbard's bought into Podcast One, so the Pulpads figured they needed to get into some sort of technology footprint.
Well, what's the radio piece of this? I didn't even know that Cupcella was doing radio until.
Well, I guess that they're actually doing some the audio from the Bring Me the News stories are actually being run on radio stations. So.
Huh. Oh, really?
I didn't know that either, but I think that's available now. I don't know.
Interesting. Well, Pulpads are really diversified. I mean, you know, they've got they own Porsche dealerships, and they've got Pepsi bottling plants, and you know, blah blah blah. Yeah,
yeah.
And the twins.
And the twins.
There's lots of synergy between all of those.
I found it interesting. They call their radio division now what Go something. What is it?
Go 96.
Go 96. Yeah, but
go 96. No. Go Media, I thought.
Go Media, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go, yeah. Oh, yeah, right. The station is Go 96.3.
Because
right.
You're on the go when you're listening to it.
Yeah.
You can't listen to it at home.
They couldn't figure out what else to name it because it plays baseball and then does stuff between that until baseball comes on again. So I don't know. that's a station that's always struggled. So.
Yeah. Well, somebody just stuck a link in here. Why the Pulpads bought Bring Me the News.
Right. Well, I did. That was what I was talking about. If you read it, it still does not, it does not communicate exactly what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
But.
Well,
I got to find out.
Go ahead, Graham.
I was going to say there's no discussion whatsoever of what the terms of the deal were, you know, what money might have changed hands, which leads me to believe. It wasn't much.
I got to tell you that every
people keep their jobs, you know, and Rick goes on to something new, which is called Present Nation.
Yeah.
Which is aggregating healthcare news for a bunch of healthcare websites.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks like the same CMS that he used at Bring Me the News too.
What's that called?
Present Nation.
Is it? Rick Cupcella's Present Nation?
No, it's not. It's just called Present Nation. But right on the homepage, it's got Rick's email address. So you can.
Oh, there you go.
Like drop him a note. Hey, Rick.
Yo, Rick.
Yeah. What up? Yo, what's up?
What up?
Are you doing this? What's with this?
What up? What's with this name, number one? Present Nation?
Yeah.
I guess he's.
Hey, that tells me healthcare.
Modeling off of Paul Douglas's Weather Nation? I don't know.
Oh, maybe. There you go.
He does say he's one of his role models.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He wants to make money like that guy has. Holy buckets. He's sold a couple of startups and
yep.
Well, I put a link into
those numbers were revealed.
I put a link in there to rickcupcella.com.
Oh. Rick Cupcella's Rick Cupcella?
There you go. but present www.presentnation.com there's just a single page about what it is and what they're going to do and so forth.
Right.
And, but they're going to have a restful API, they say. So whatever they're driving, they're going to be able to make available almost in some ways, doesn't this feel like what the Associated Press did early on to feed news stories and then hire their own staff and blah, blah, blah. Well, now they're doing it virtually and digitally, and it feels like the same thing for just healthcare news. But maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, if you want to learn all about Rick's endeavors and his books,
he runs a marketing consulting firm too. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Wow.
IE Network. Never run across these, but they've done work for big guys in the neighborhood. So
yeah. Nice.
And he's part of Go-Kart Labs, kind of. I mean, he was always incubated at Go-Kart Labs or somehow in cahoots with those guys, or they owned a portion of Bring Me the News, the way I understood it.
Well, and then last but not least, he is the master of stubble. Because every photo he has.
Yes.
Master of stubble.
Yeah. I mean, he's got that look where he got a little bit of stubble going on.
Somebody had to pick up the mantle that Don Johnson dropped.
Don Johnson.
That's right. That's right. So. Well, what other top tech stories are there?
Well, I saw this one with Verizon killing off the contract and smartphone subsidies, and thought that this is going to have some big ramifications here.
Yeah,
and it might have big ramifications for Apple too, because now you've got the biggest carrier where instead of going to the store and saying, "Okay, I'll sign another contract and pay you $200 and getting an iPhone 6S," you have to pay $650 for it. Now they'll finance it just like T-Mobile does. So it'll be like
AT&T,
you know, $25 a month or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that changes the psychology of how you go in and upgrade.
Well, I think it does too. But remember, for example, at AT&T, I signed up for I forget the name of their program now, but it's, you know, it's like $45 a month for an iPhone 6. And then when the new one comes out in September, I just walk in and give them my old one, and I get a new one.
Yeah, that's the same on T-Mobile, but my son has an iPhone 6, and he pays 26, something like that a month. But when the new one comes out, he can just go trade it in, too.
So 27 a month just for the phone? Or
just for the phone. They finance it over 2 years.
Yeah.
So you end up paying $650 or $750, whatever the normal deal is. But there's no interest, so it doesn't really matter, you know?
Right. Actually, when I did my my 6 Plus, it's 20 installments, so not 2 years. It's less than 2 years.
Right.
Will you own it at the end of that time, or?
Yeah, but they do have the early trade-in thing, right, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah. So is it after 1 year? Is that
after 1 year.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hmm.
Well, we'll have to see what the upgrade cycle looks like.
Yep. You
know? Yeah, it should be good.
I found it interesting. You know, it's like, okay, well, I guess you're going to pay more for a phone. So that's all there is to it.
Yep. Well, I thought this next story too about why Combinator's startup school doing a podcast.
This was Graham's.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting because it's there really isn't anything where people are really sort of tapping into the brain trust that exists out there and, you know, doing it on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll get wide listenership because of Y Combinator's reputation. So yeah, it just literally was announced and it's through episode one at this point, I guess.
Yeah.
With none other than Alex Ohanian, the co-founder of Reddit, you know, if you want to hear about that. But obviously there are lessons to be learned from these startups. So, yeah, I think it'll be a big one. It'll rise to the top of the charts and in the podcast world, I suspect, certainly in the startup podcast world pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, do you guys recall there's a guy named Doug Kay, and Doug is an old radio guy and so on. And early 2000s, it says here 2003, he had started something called IT Conversations.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So, I remember that.
Yeah. So when I was working at Lawson, I would download these and I would listen to them on my iPod as I drove back and forth to work. So, you know, I listened to a 1 hour show So I listened to half of it on the way over and half on the way back. And it was great. I mean, it just made the commute fly. And I loved IT conversations. And there were often times when, you know, I'd be sitting with Dean Hager, for example, and I would say, oh, by the way, I just listened to this great podcast today. What's a podcast? So I'd explain that. And the podcast was with Shai Agassi, who at that time was the CTO at SAP, one of the competitors of Lawson. And he said, blah, 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 and they're doing this with the platform and all of that. And he was like, what? And I said, well, let me send you the MP3 and you can listen to it. So he did so on his computer. But it was fabulous because, I mean, the things that you tapped into, the brain trust that you tapped into is incredible. And that's what I think is really interesting about this, about Y Combinator doing it, because it's almost like they're sort of sharing the love. You know, you don't have to go to their camps and be one of the chosen and all of that. If you can start right. to tap into some of this good stuff.
Or read Paul Graham's long essays.
Yeah.
Which yeah. go on for like, you know, 6,000, 8,000 words sometimes, maybe even longer. But they're great. But, you know, I can't remember when I had time to read one, you know?
I know. Yeah.
So this will help.
Yep.
And I suspect Paul Graham himself will be participating in these things.
Oh, probably.
But they have so many partners now beyond him, you know. There's a whole raft of them. And they're not even all in the Bay Area. It seems to me I read where one of them's out east. So
yep.
they have partners sprinkled around now, I think.
Well, hey, Philster.
Whatster?
You know, you're the guy that would know about this because I'm sure everybody's been looking at it at your shop. But Microsoft open sources its iOS toolkit. Now, we kind of touched on this before.
No, we're not looking at that at all.
Okay.
Why would we be looking?
What, so you're not going to support Windows?
What? On Windows Phone?
Well, I mean, on Windows, they have tablets and they have computers and, you know.
I think most of what we do on the tablet side is going to be web-based. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
Well, it's an interesting there's actually two projects here. There's one for iOS, which is what Islandwood. And then the other one, Astoria, which is for Android. But the two things are the same. It's their toolkit that allows you to port your application to Windows 10 easily from the other development stack. So if you want to support it, Microsoft makes it very easy. Now it may not be part of the business plan of a lot of developers to do this, but
yeah,
for indie developers, maybe it's something that opens up another platform easily for them. I don't know.
It could be. I mean, anytime you want to, you've got to do things like that to open up your platform in this day and age. So yeah, I don't disagree with it. It's not something that we're going to focus on at least, you know, right away. So.
Yeah, no, I think this is something to watch and could be a long-term deal. That's why I threw it in the notes there.
What I thought was interesting was Graham had brought this up earlier in the week about the Office mobile is better on iPads than on Windows 10 tablets.
That link.
I thought that kind of interesting. So,
well, it's the cobbler's children, you know?
It's the, it's the cobbler's children. They always have the worst shoes. Yes,
that's
so
right.
True. Yeah, I gotcha.
And they don't have iPads either, so they're just crying.
Yeah,
they're crying. They're weeping openly in the streets. So
that's right.
But we're all set for a big, switching from Microsoft to Apple. We, you know, get the big event coming up on September 9th.
Yeah, roughly September 9th.
Somewhere in the 9th.
Somewhere
could
in the
8th. Yeah. Could be the 10th.
Well,
week of the 7th sometime.
I'm telling you, this is where I think we're going to see a lot of HomeKit stuff with the new Apple TV. And I'm very interested to see how open they make the new Apple TV.
Yeah.
But
well, it sounds like Siri integration in that TV and all sorts of things. Oh, yeah. So,
App Store.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of exciting. So
no, well, it'll be huge if they do it right. If they hobble it though, you know, that what they could do is say, okay, we're gonna have an App Store for games. That would make it more of an interesting platform, but I'd like to see them open it up so it's an App Store for video as well, so that you don't have to be anointed by Apple to have your video stream show up on it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and if they blow it, they can just buy Roku, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Roku is sort of like the Wild West, though, so I don't see Apple.
It is.
Yeah. It is. Sometimes it gets pretty ugly there.
Anything goes.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. But that you know, I'm a little uncertain on the Siri voice control. I mean, Phil, you have an Amazon Echo. I mean, do you ever feel like, Jesus, things are sitting there waiting for me to talk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that in the cool thing of the week. Cause I did get the Echo last week. And
okay.
So
shush then. We'll talk about it. No,
we can talk about it now. That's fine. We'll just have to skip over my one cool thing. But, I think that, you know, I've spent a little over a week with Echo, and while I'm very impressed with the voice recognition and very impressed with how it operates and its design, I don't use it.
Really?
Oh, really?
Huh. You don't say, hey, turn on, I don't know.
Well, that's the thing. The stuff that I have with SmartThings does not interface with Echo yet.
No, but I mean, you could turn on a radio station. So I don't know what radio station you listen to, right? Turn on NPR.
And you can listen to music and that sort of a thing. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, with the added ability of Siri voice command and access to video and basically all of the other benefits of Apple TV, to me, it seems like, well, I'll just wait until the Apple TV comes out, because it's basically going to deliver the same sort of, you know, it's like same sort of information that I'm getting now with the Echo. But that said, I mean, that the Echo is a really nice device. And, you know, setting timers and things like that is great, but maybe it's just a little too early for me. They haven't built enough alliances with the IoT and that sort of thing. Cause I'd love to be able to tie into my SmartThings hub and say, you know, is my garage door open? Yes or no, or something like that. But right now it doesn't give me that ability. But,
well, I also read a couple of reviews on the Echo, and one guy had said that the thing that would really make it useful is if I could tie it into other services. Cause he says, I'm primarily a Google user of email and calendar and so on. And I can't tie it into anything, but see, I'm wondering if, you know, if this, then that IFTTT, there will be Echo, or maybe there already are Echo related things that you can use that would in fact allow you to do that integration.
Well, I mean, they've built alliances with things like Pandora and that sort of thing. So you can access your Pandora account, and then there, and iHeartRadio is part of it. But I mean, yes, it does not have Google services, and in fact uses Bing as their search engine. So, it just may be a little early for it. And I, you know, if it comes down to the added integration of being able to stream videos and watch videos and actually use an appliance that's already in your house, and not, you know, tying into your TV or whatever, I think it might be really interesting to go that route instead. Yeah. Plus it's still a little creepy that the thing's always listening.
Well, yeah,
it's still a little creepy.
Yep. Well, I know we haven't done this gang mentality segment for a while, and I was considering doing a gang mentality, but doing it on the GOP debate, except that we've sworn off politics and religion on this podcast. But I swear to God, there are so many fabulous pictures of Donald Trump that I would love to use for this week's podcast. So if we had, then we could.
Probably shouldn't go down that slippery slope.
No. But instead, what should we talk about, Mr. Phil?
Well, no, I think that, you know, this is the one thing. I did go to a couple of events this week, and first article that was written by Peter Kane from, is it Venture Loft? What is it that he's doing?
Startup Venture Loft.
Yeah. And that was in the Business Journal, I believe. And then the response Jeff Pesek had in tech.mn. I think that has caused, you know, it's fun. The articles are interesting in and of themselves, just to see the opinions of both of these guys. However, the comments, at least the ones that came streaming in on the tech.mn thing, are very interesting to read. But this the ongoing discussion of, does Minnesota do enough to foster a startup culture, a startup environment? You know, the ongoing, everybody goes to the valley looking for money, you know, argument. So it was really interesting to see that. And that has gotten, you know, there was a lot of discussion about that in a couple of events that I went to. So what, I, you know, Graham, I know you know all the players in this. What is your thought on this? Is this a? I think it's a healthy argument, a healthy discussion, not necessarily an argument. It's always a healthy discussion, but where do you fall on that stuff?
Well, you know, I don't know all the players. I don't know all the commenters, although I know several of them. But, you know, this is just such an ongoing refrain that, you know, there's never enough money here. And you know, I don't buy that, number one. There may not be enough active VCs here, but there are a ton of active angels. And I discover new ones every day. And I network with these folks, and there's no question they are doing the seed stage and sometimes beyond funding of deserving startups in this town. That, you know, it's amazing how angels have filled that gap, because the VCs don't do the small early stage, seed stage kind of stuff. They just don't. It's very rare that they participate in deals under $1.5 million or $2 million. So, you know, it's like a broken record, you know, there's never enough money. But the interesting thing that came out of this discussion is this sense of entitlement that people expect money to just flow their way based on a cool idea, and a cool idea is not a business, you know.
Yeah.
A new cool app is not a business. There are tons of great apps being developed in our town, and some go on to some success, but do they turn into a business, a platform, or a SaaS company or something? You know, I mean, it's hard to, these angels aren't dumb, you know. They aren't just funding cool ideas. They want to know a lot more, and they want to see a team and an experienced team behind it. And if you don't have that, you're not going to get any money.
Well, it's the ultimate meritocracy. You know, my big thing with this whole thing, especially the article on tech.mn, was, you know, you can criticize and you can position and you can do things without being a dick. But seriously, I mean, yeah, you know, like Patrick Delaney, whom I know well because of working with he and Justin Grammons on the IoT Fuse conference, his whole thing is, you know, he gets frustrated and flummoxed and exasperated and all that, just like the rest of us. But he's always looking for how to move things forward. You know, what's it going to take to move things forward? And at the end of the day, you guys are absolutely right when you say, hey, it's all about if you've got the right idea and you've got the right team. And, oh, by the way, you don't have just a PowerPoint deck. You've actually created something, or you've moved forward with a demo and you've got something demonstrable, and you've got a plan to actually execute on it and to go make it happen. You got to do all of that, and it's got to be world class before somebody's going to write you a check.
Yep.
I mean, it's
not a charity thing. That was one of the things from the comments that I picked up. It's not a donation deal. Even though, ironically, Kickstarter and you know, all these other fundraising kind of things are being used for some startups today, it isn't. You have to have a real business.
Yes.
Except if you go to Kickstarter.
That's true.
I mean, Kickstarter,
and sometimes it works.
Kickstarter does put a different spin on things, because that is money that you're spending that you know, yes, maybe you get some tangible good in return as a gift, but you're not getting an investment in the company. You're really giving them their money, the money to use in exchange for the ability to say, hey, I got something early. I mean, when those of us that got into the Pebble watch, you know, I paid, I don't know, what was it, $99 level or something like that? You got a Pebble watch. That's what I was buying, was the watch. I wasn't looking to get a piece of the company. Now, granted, a lot of Kickstarters will acquire, you know, get money, get investors via the Kickstarter platform simply because of the, you know, the promotion of the whole thing. You know, the reason I was enamored with this a couple of times this week was that, you know, even at the Glitch event, they talked about the need for tax credits for the mobile gaming industry or the gaming industry. And it's like, wait a minute, tax credits? You want tax credits? You know, I think it's somewhat, we've gotten in that position where We expect the government to really do whatever it can to keep people and businesses going in a given region or a given state or a given city, you know, Minnesota and Minneapolis do a lot of things to try to stimulate business here in Minnesota. But at the same time, you've got to realize those assets and those funds have to go to places that they feel will make an economic impact, you know, through hiring, through, you know, business transactions, that sort of a thing for the city and or the state. So, you know, maybe a small game company's not going to really, you know, employ that many people, or, it, you know, I think that the priorities just have to be this state has a responsibility to everybody in the state to say, this is where we're going to invest our money. So,
well, and there's
things, even through the course of tax credits,
unless it's, you know, spending hundreds of millions on a stadium, except though, guess what? You know, I at one point really had a hard time with what was happening with the Mall of America. Mm-hmm. And I will stand corrected that I'm not, when I do my predictions, I'm not 100% correct. You know?
Yeah.
If I can make it on the other side of 75, I'm good. But I thought the same thing with the stadium. And I got to tell you, development has exploded on that end of town.
Oh, it's huge. But the question will see. The question still remains: is it worth that investment?
Well,
obviously,
exactly.
Obviously, that the city and the state is sort of betting on the come in the hopes that a stadium of that size and of that stature will, you know, actually, you know, generate more revenue for the city. So, yeah. I mean, we'll see how that plays out. That's the ongoing argument, obviously.
Right.
But it's interesting to see. There is sometimes that feeling of, well, we're entitled to more. And I think that,
right.
I think that there's always, there's a need as a business person to look for every possible avenue, you know, to secure, you know, funding, to secure a leg up, to secure a benefit, you know, to secure something that will help you accelerate your business quickly. But ultimately, as Tim said, it comes down to, you got to build a great product. You've got to build a product that people want. And yes, yep. The Bay Area does have this really great vibe of we're willing to throw anything against the wall and see if it'll stick, because there's a lot of money there, folks. There's a lot of money there.
It doesn't mean
it's going to be in every city and every state. There's not, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? Minneapolis has a lot of other things to offer. Minnesota has many other things to offer besides, you know, besides in an insane amount of money. It's a great place to raise kids. It's a wonderful place to live. It's a, you know, it's got.
We're here.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
Left. Okay, lutefisk, not a good thing. But you know, we all have our downsides. But you know, the fact is that it's a trade-off. If you're looking just purely for somebody to fund the bombastic ideas, I'm sorry, Minnesota's probably not the place for you.
Well, I saw a great article, and I'll see if I can find it. But it was comparing different markets. You know, like Austin, Texas, which actually has a pretty strong base in technology and so on. They talked about Minneapolis, they talked about New York City, yada, yada, yada. But when they talked about Silicon Valley, one of the things, and this just stuck in my mind, because one of the things about Silicon Valley is that once the momentum got going, then venture capitalists sort of came out of nowhere because people had money and they began chasing deals. And that just reinforced that momentum and it made it go faster and faster and faster. And the argument was, and the comparison was, to the film industry in Los Angeles. Same thing. Once that momentum began, then all of a sudden the ecosystem there began to grow. And pretty soon the investors began to grow. And pretty soon the talent came there. And the momentum just got to going. So the flywheel was moving faster. And the same thing happened in
there
the Bay Area. And it's happening here with MedTech. I mean, we are arguably the number one MedTech in the world. Right here in the Twin Cities. And it's because of that momentum. It's because of the companies. But look at how long it took. So to your guys' point, or maybe all of our points, is that that's exactly what's got to happen. People have got to build great stuff. And you know, you look at Code 42 and you look at Jamf and you look at other companies that are really starting to move and are becoming world-class players. Sport Engine's on a roll, yada, yada. Yep. I mean, the same thing is happening. And people just have to stop bitching and keep working and keep inventing, and it's going to keep going.
No whining.
That's
yeah,
right.
I love that. Well, let's skip over the security tip of the week because there really wasn't a great one. But Let's go into the cool thing of the week. Now, we talked a little bit about the Echo. Do you have anything else to add, Phil?
No, not really. No, I just, but I, again, it's, you know, I just, it's one, it's a cool thing to have in the house.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out if it's a cool thing that earns its keep.
Yep. Gotcha.
So that's my one cool thing of the week. So that's okay. So it wasn't so cool and it wasn't. Yeah. But anyway, Tim, how about yours?
Yeah, it's a new board. It's called NanoPi, and it's a very, very small single board computer like a Raspberry Pi. It costs $16. It is just coming out now. It's lower power than a Raspberry Pi, so it's not perfect for every project. But for a lot of them, it will be a really good solution because for $16, you get a single board computer with integrated Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and it's compatible with the GPIO or the expansion ports that you use in projects for the Raspberry Pi. And it has another one too. So it has two different expansion header, one that's the 40-pin, which is the Raspberry Pi one, and then another 12-pin, which looks to be, I guess, proprietary to them. But anyway, so interesting development. I track this space, so... Yeah. Always looking for new and cool things, and this looks like one that might be worth $16 to get and try out.
Very cool, very cool, Mr.
Graham. If you're so inclined.
Of course, yes. Well, I don't know if I'm inclined to buy this Olympus Air camera, but it pairs with your iPhone. Have you seen this thing? Just released in the U.S. I guess it's been available in Japan for 5 months. But it's kind of a weird looking deal that clips where your iPhone clips onto the back of the lens assembly, the body, and lens, and it, you know, makes you look like you're shooting with what do you call them? Direct
DSLR.
DSLR.
Digital single lens reflex.
It looks like a lens that you mount your iPhone on.
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, exactly. It's a very weird looking device. Yeah.
Well, and Engadget says you can get the body in August for $300, but if you need some glass to go along with that, you got to spend $200 more for a kit with a 14 to 42 millimeter lens. So you're looking at $500 to impress your friends here, but I'm sure it shoots some amazing images. 16 megapixel sensor and does raw capture, up to 1080 video recording. 10 FPS continuous shooting, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi. It's a pretty cool looking thing. I guess it's similar to the Sony's QX line of devices, which I haven't seen. But anyway, it just goes to show you how the camera industry is trying to take advantage of that doggone smartphone explosion out there.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah. It is very, because everybody uses it. I mean, we were just in D.C. over the last week, and, you know, you used to lug a camera around. I know, Steve, you still do take a camera because you like using your DSLR, but, I'm amazed at how many people don't carry cameras anymore. Just use their phones.
Yeah. Well, I carry that when we travel now. I carry that little Sony RX100 M3. The photos out of that thing, it's a pocket size camera. The photos are unbelievable.
Yeah,
but yeah, interesting.
So, well, but this is interesting because it really is the Olympus Air is it's basically a body, and you can get different lenses for it. So
yeah,
I think it's kind of cool.
Well, so my cool thing came just through happenstance. I was talking to the CTO at one of my clients. And he says, "Hey, I got to show you something." And he shows me something called Cyfe, C-Y-F-E. And it's because he's part owner of some franchises. And the franchise company uses Cyfe, and they've white labeled it with their own domain and so forth. But they have all of these pre-built dashboards. I mean, it's basically you can pull data from all these popular services, and I'll put a link in the show notes to Cyfe.com. And when you look down and look at the logos of all the widgets that are available just out of the box, and they're building more of them all the time.
Yeah.
It is absolutely. I mean, you should have seen these frickin' dashboards. He had, you know, because he said, yeah, we've been using Hootsuite forever.
Right.
But look at this social media dashboard. And he put this social media dashboard up and he had all these different services that he'd integrated with. And
nice.
Oh, my. I can't even go into all this stuff because you know, but sales stuff and tapping into marketing automation and all the Google Analytics and all of this stuff. And it's stunning.
Well, and you know, guess, look at it.
Just a minute. Guess how much?
It's free, $19 a month.
It's $19 a month, but if you pay a year in advance, it's $14 a
month.
Which
is really a good price, which is probably the lowest cost I've seen for a, you know, an all-inclusive dashboard in a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a space that NetVibes could have owned, and they just they just totally lost it.
They blew it.
Yep, check that out. Do check it out. CYFE.
.com.
Cyfe.com.
Yeah, I'm going to sign up. Signing up now.
Signing up, though.
It's a cool thing.
It is a cool thing.
It is. Of the week.
Thank you, Steve.
Maybe of the year. So upcoming events, the only new thing that I see on here is Mini Demo 21 on September 10th at the Riverview Theater. Mm-hmm. And
Riverview is always a good spot.
It is. It is.
Also SMB MSP next week. I'm actually going to be doing something for that. So I'll save it and talk about it next week. But it's going to be kind of fun.
Cool.
So this beer for breakfast,
brewing
maybe.
Up buzz for beer. Is what this is.
There's a great T-shirt, beer. It's so much more than a breakfast food.
Oh, that's great.
We'll talk about that event and everything else that happens over the next week. Next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Have a good week. You betcha.
closing time.